three of them by right-handers, five by left-handers. This one by Mattingly. Oh, hang on to the roof. Goodbye, home run, Don Mattingly.
The Savage Studios. This is the Savage Empire with your host, Mike Trainer.
This is indeed the Savage Empire. I'm your host, Mike Trainer. It's good to be back. Good to have you back. And I know you just threw a fist pump listening to that soundbite. The goosebumps were there. The memories came flooding in. The reason for that, I just watched the Don Mattingly MLB documentary that was on, and it was awesome. And it was full of little tidbits that I did not know. I mean, you know a lot. There's not a whole lot more to Mattingly that was going to come out in this documentary that you didn't know. I mean, we all know about the 84 batting title. We know about the 85 AL MVP. You know, the 9 gold gloves, the home runs, the home run streak, the 95 playoffs. We know. We know how it ends, how sadly it ends. But we did not know how he was friends with George Brett, for one. I had never knew that. Maybe some of you did, but I had no idea. And they were like really good friends, which is crazy to me. I knew he was close with Guidry. Bernie looked up to him. They didn't have Paul O'Neill in this documentary, but he still calls him Cap. And that's just the respect that that man had earned by playing 14 seasons as hard as he could, and literally gave it all on the field. And the way it ended, you know, I tend to remember it as he ended it for his back. But the way he describes it is he ended it to be there for his kids. And, you know, as a fan, I'm selfish. And I wanted him to not retire, obviously. And technically, he didn't retire until 97. And we're going to get to something that I had heard years ago at the end of this Mattingly conversation. And maybe you can guess what it is. But that was something. It was really cool how Yogi wanted to use him as a switch player. And, of course, I was too young to really remember that. All I ever remember, I've seen clips of him playing the outfield. I never knew that he actually was a part-time outfielder for the team. I did not know that. So you have to excuse my ignorance on that. I was basically a baby. Because he came up in 82. I was 1 year old, played 7 games. Played 91 games in 83. And it really wasn't until 84 where he played 153 games, and then the rest of his career was, you know, from that on. So, you know, I remember him mainly from, I would have to say, 86 on. I was like 5 years old. So I remember him from that part on, and that's when he was the GOAT, as far as I was concerned. He was, to me, and maybe a lot of other people, and I'm sure to most of his peers, was the best player in baseball. And we're not going to talk about why he's not in the Hall of Fame. You can attribute that to his injuries and how it just cut him short. zapped him of a lot of his power up until the leg kick when he started to hit home runs. But, you know, and whether there's still an outside chance he may get in, and I don't know. We're not going to get into that. Maybe it's a conversation down the line. We're going to talk about the player he was and then the coach and then the manager he became, because that's all part of what happened in the documentary. So we know about the home run streak. We know about the grand slams, the 9 gold gloves. We know about the batting title, the AL MVP, the All-Stars. You know, it doesn't really, maybe doesn't tell the story of just the type of player he was. And I'm sure, you know, those meant a lot to him, especially the batting title when it came down literally to the last game of the season up against Dave Winfield, who was just an all-star. Dave Winfield was, he was a superstar. I wish they never had gotten rid of him, but you know, you can thank Steinbrenner for that one. That was a big mistake on his part, but off the sidetrack here, let's get back on track. Mattingly was just a guy who was built for New York. He was a quiet leader on the field, but didn't take shit from anybody. Didn't take shit from George. He went back and forth with him. Then everybody remembers the old Simpsons cartoon with Mr. Burns, you know, telling Mattingly to shave his sideburns. Mattingly, I thought I told you to shave those sideburns. We all remember that. It was iconic. Well, that was the whole, you know, Steinbrenner picking on Mattingly to tell him to cut the mullet. The mullet was getting a little too long. A little longer than what Cole's long hair is now. But, you know, George isn't around anymore. Otherwise, that should be nice and neat. But, you know, maybe they're starting to lax on these things. Who knows? But no beards, which I'm kind of okay with. Call me a boomer. I'm kind of okay with that. But that's, you know, that's off the track again. You know, it's easy to get sidetracked a lot of times. But we're talking about Mattingly. I remember him playing. I went to a few games as a kid, not many because, you know, my dad worked and, you know, as most families did in the city, we struggled. So, you know, going to a game was a treat. So I remember going to a couple games as a little kid. Honestly, don't remember who they played, but I do remember watching Mattingly and just being focused on him and watching him play. And to me, that was everything. It's funny because as big of a fan now that I am, I care about the score and I try not to get emotionally tied to any one particular player. It's always the team first for me. So, you know, yeah, there's player exceptions that I love, but if they're gone tomorrow, then, you know, that's it. They're not on the team and I tend not to care. It's about the guys who are here and the guys who can help. So, you know, quite a difference from when I was a kid and the Yankees weren't winning any titles. So, you know, I didn't know championships. I didn't know anything about winning until 96, obviously. But I knew Mattingly. And I knew that's the kind of guy I wanted to be. That's the kind of player I wanted to be. You know, if you're a kid of a certain age, that's the kind of mustache you wanted to have. You know, not so much with the mullet. I wasn't a mullet fan, but the stash was it. And who didn't want a Mattingly stash? That's Tom Selleck fucking Burt Reynolds type shit right there. It was glorious. But, you know, I just remember going to a couple of these games over the years and just, you know, as a kid, I'm watching him and I'm just, you know, starstruck. And, you know, that's like meeting God, you know, although I didn't meet him, but, you know, seeing him in person. And that was everything to me. And that's the kind of player I wish that a lot of these guys today would be. And maybe that's just me being old now. And, you know, if I was a kid, I'd probably feel it differently. And then, you know, maybe I shouldn't make fun of people that I call fraud fans who just follow players. Because, you know what, I guess for a moment of time there, I was sort of the same way. Now, I was a Yankee fan, and I didn't, you know, I didn't switch teams. So that part is true. I'm not a fraud like that. But, you know, I can't even tell you the score of those games. I just, who they were playing. I just remember Mattingly. I can't even remember what he did. I mean, this is 35 years ago, something like that, 36 or 30, you know, 33, 34 years ago, however old I was. At the old Yankee Stadium, and I miss that place to this day. But back to the documentary, and it was so well done. And he was, you know, it starts off with him taking us through his hometown, showing us the tiny house where he was raised. Who I just assume they don't own that house anymore because I don't think he was in there. But, you know, it just shows you the humble beginnings, the farm boy who just stayed true to himself, didn't let the city corrupt him, and just knew how good he was. And he knew the type of player that he had to be to get that team, because he was a team guy, to where it needed to go. Now, obviously, it didn't pan out. But it was a hell of a ride. If rules had been different like they were today, you know, with the wild card a little earlier, they would have made the playoffs in some of those years. The teams, you know, some of them were pretty good and some of them were just downright bad. The early 90 teams were just bad. 90 to like 93 was just terrible. Terrible fucking teams. 94 is when, they had a good goddamn shot. Although he says in the documentary that if 94 didn't end, he's probably not playing in 95. But 94, they could have won the World Series. That's how good of a team they were. And nobody will remember that except for the Yankee fans that saw that team. Because all anybody's ever going to remember is that the strike. The players had the strike, and the season got canceled. And this was like August, and it was just fucking devastating because it was going to be Yankees Montreal Expos World Series, most likely. And how crazy is that to say today that there is no Expos? I mean, they might be again, but there is none now. And that was his best shot because 95 was just, you know, they weren't good enough to win. Even if they got past the Mariners, I don't know if they were good enough to win. And I can't even tell you who won in 95. You know, I don't even remember, honestly. Was it the Braves? I think a National League team won. Can't remember. But, you know, I remember just the type of man he was. And you can hear it in some of the, you know, the player profiles. Buck Showalter, who was a teammate with him in the minors, and then obviously his manager, just the love and affection he has for him. And Bernie Williams loves him because, you know, Bernie came up. I mean, we talk about the core four and then Bernie, but Bernie was there through the dark ages, the bad years. Because I believe he came up in 91. And he had to go through the whole crap of that bad team before he could experience the dynasty years. So, you know, he learned from Mattingly. Paul O'Neill wasn't in the documentary, but, you know, he came in 93. And, you know, Mattingly was there, and he learned from him. And, you know, some of his teammates throughout the years. And it's just, it was great. and it was nice to hear. And, you know, Guidry especially just loved him. You can tell. You know, he's like, he owned New York City in the 80s. Forget it. And that's true, because I remember growing up in the 80s, and, you know, he did. He owned that goddamn city. And if you're older than me, you remember it better than I do, so I'm sure you agree. If not, you know, tell me I'm wrong. But that's not the way I remember it, because I remember playing Little League in the city that, you know, everybody wanted to be Manning. Everybody wanted to wear number 23. You know? Had to fight for it to get it. Not literally fight, but, you know. So, it was cool. And then seeing all those highlights and just through his career and, you know, how goddamn good he was defensively at first base, man. I mean, Jesus Christ, he was... It's a magician how good he was. And we have been blessed. You know, first base has been an important position in this organization, you know, basically from Garagon and, you know, Mattingly, the Tino, and Giambi, you know, he could hit, wasn't great with the glove. He could pick it. That's about it. You know, Teixeira was good up until he got, you know, his body gave out on him. But after that, we, you know, Rizzo now, but he's, you know, he's at the end of his rope. He's got a few years left. You know, it's important to have that kind of player who can be a good fielder and can hit and hit with power. And that's a mainstay for this organization that they need to continue to have. And, you know, I look at the top prospects in the organization. I don't really see a first baseman. So I feel like, you know, in the next few years, drafting-wise, they need to develop that next big first base stud, you know. So they need to work on that. They got like 20,000 shortstops, but you need a first baseman unless you're going to start converting somebody. But we'll talk about that later on. But to talk about that documentary, and, you know, it goes from his playing years and then, you know, how he basically carried that team, because at the end of it in 95, when he wanted to make the playoffs, he told Buck, he said, listen, I'm going to lay it all out. And, you know, if I give out, I give out. He goes, but I'm gonna turn it on, and he's gonna leave it all out. So he just ripped. He ripped it, and he just tore it up. They helped that team win 18 out of their last 22. They clinched the wild card on the final day, and then, you know, in the series, he hit over 400. You know, we all remember the game 2 home run, the back-to-back after Ruben Sierra. The game before was the Jim Larritz home run. That series was a blessing and a disguise and a curse, because it had given the city a taste of something they hadn't seen since 80. And, you know, it had been so long. You know, Yankee fans I'm talking about, not Met fans, because they won in 86, but it became, we got a win for the cap. And, you know, just as you can tell, the years are going by, and he had not made the playoffs yet. It was a focal point. And I remember it being a discussion amongst people, like, you know, when are they going to get him into the playoffs? Because, you know, we got to get him a ring. Unfortunately, it didn't happen because, you know, Edgar Martinez and Ken Griffey Jr., you know, they ripped our hearts out. I can still see that image in my head. Here comes Griffey. And, you know, just it's murder. And I can't watch that game. I can't even watch the series. because I feel like I let him down. And I'm not even a player. I was a kid. I was a teenager. Barely a teenager, I guess. 14. Well, I guess a teenager. But, you know, I feel like I let him down. Like, to me, that is worse than anything because we didn't help him get a ring. You know, so I can only imagine how bad the players felt, and then they were just tearing themselves up. Now, you know, obviously he, you know, he handled it a little bit better. I suspect that probably when the Yankees started to win, he was probably kicking himself, but he'll never admit to it because, you know, he retired for his family, for his kids. But you got to know somewhere deep down inside that that had to be killing him, thinking, oh, I could have been a part of this. I could have gotten a ring if not for my fucking family. I'm just kidding. Family's important. But you know what I mean. I had to. And he's human, so of course he felt that way. He won't admit it. He'll tell you to this day he made the right choice. I wanted to see my kids grow up because he got very emotional when he was talking about how his dad was always there for him. And as a father myself, I felt that because I know there's going to be times that I won't be there for my kid, whether it'll be because of work, which is sad to say, but it's a reality. You know, or maybe other things, who knows? But I would like to try, and I'm not in the position of being an athlete where I'm on the road all the time, but, you know, I will be there for my kid as much and as humanly possible that I can. You know, if I can make every important moment in his life, you know, then certainly I'm going to try. So I understand where he's coming from, and if you're a father listening to this, you get it. You get it. And he got really emotional talking about it because he understood that and he did not want to let his kids down. So I get it. But goddamn, when, you know, 96 came and they won and then, you know, 98, 99, 2000, now he wouldn't have played that long, but, you know, he could have gotten one for 96 at least. But that brings me to my rumor that I had heard many years ago. Now, I don't know if you guys knew this, but because Mattingly retired in 97, so he didn't play in 96. Now, obviously, they brought Tino in, and they knew he was not coming back, but he did not officially retire to 97. And people might not remember that. He did get a World Series ring in 96. I'm actually looking at a picture of it right now. He declined it because he didn't play. So, my question is, what happened to it? So, I'm going to read this here and see if it says anything. But he did get a ring, because I remember hearing that. And I remember as a young man asking questions about where is his ring? Who has his ring? Because he refused it because he didn't play. He wasn't playing. He was technically, in his mind, he was retired, although he really wasn't. He was still technically a part of the team. So I understand the team wanting to give him a ring. And I understand him not wanting it because he contributed nothing to it. Although you can say, though, he did in the sense that he got them into the playoffs the year before and they got that taste of it. And then some of those players on the team were a big part of winning in 96, like Bernie, Strawberry, Boggs, Coney, you know, a lot of those guys were huge. And they were there in 95, you know, and earlier. So you can kind of credit him for it. But where is that ring? And I would love to get an answer to that. Maybe I should. I think I'm going to start tweeting that to some of the beat writers. And maybe I can find an answer for that. Because that's a great mystery to solve, don't you think? And that's the thing I wanted to save to the end of the Mattingly thing. Where is that ring? Because he doesn't have it. Do the Steinbrenners have it? Like, did George keep it? You know, because I can see that. Do they have it in a safe somewhere in case they, you know, he decides one year, you know what, give it to me? I don't know if that's ever going to change, but they casted it. I mean, it was made. You know, what do? You're not going to destroy it, right? I mean, maybe they did. I have no idea, but I need to find out. That's one of those mysteries that's been driving me nuts for like 20 fucking years now. More than that. So, I'm going to start digging into that. And this Mattingly documentary just had me thinking about it again because I hadn't thought about that in a few years. And I'm going to look into it. And I'm definitely going to update you guys on that. But that's my impression of the documentary. It was, you know, great. A little sad at the end because we all know how it ended, but well worth the hour and a half of your time. If you're a Yankees fan who had never seen Mattingly play, watch it. If you had seen him play, watch it. You're going to enjoy it either way. So that's all I got to say about that. Just go watch it and enjoy it. But I'm going to find out about that fucking ring because I need to know myself. But let's get to today's Yankees. They made a few trades lately in the last, like, day. So that's kind of, you know, they're getting ready. They rounded out their 40-man. I guess, last week they claimed Jason Rosario from the Red Sox. He is a 22-year-old. He's on the 40-man. So what is he? What position does he play? 256 average. Is he outfielder? Oh, he's a defensive center fielder. So he's just somebody who they'll probably cut later on. Moving on up. They made a trade for... Oh, they signed Shelby Miller. Remember that name from like 10 years ago when he was pretty decent. You know, for more depth in the minor leagues, I guess, pitcher. Not even worth really talking about. I guess he pitched today, too. I didn't really get a chance to watch. But they made a trade to bolster up their catcher position. They got Jose Trevino from Texas for Albert Abreu and left-hander Bobby Elstrom. So they had to get rid of Abreu. He had no options left, and they weren't going to use him. He wasn't going to be up with the team, so they had to, you know, trade him or release him. So, you know, that way it's good. They get Trevino because Ben Rorvit still hurt. But I tell you, I got to be a little pissed if I'm, so Rorvit's still out with the oblique strain. But if I'm Brantley, I'll tell you, I'd be a little pissed because it's like it seems like this happens to him every year. And, you know, I'll tell you what, I guess in his case, if the Yankees are going to keep bringing him in and he's collecting a paycheck, he's probably going to keep doing it. But it seems like every year he gets kind of screwed out of a backup position. So, you know, they assigned him to the minor league camp today. Well, he's in AAA camp, so, you know, sucks for him. But Chirino's on the roster now. And then today they made a trade for Miguel Castro for Jolly Rodriguez. Now, Castro is on the Mets. And I couldn't even remember Castro being on the Mets. I remember him with Baltimore. I guess it's been a while since he was there, a couple years. But that's where I remember him from. So, hard thrower, not always the best command, but, you know, I think that's a good move for the Yankees. And Jolie is really just a left-handed specialist. If he's not, you know, facing lefties and then with the you know, it's not too good for him. It's kind of a waste of a spot, although he pitched fairly decent last year. But, you know, it's a rare trade with the Mets. Apparently, the Yankees had interest in getting Chris Paddock from the Padres, who is rumored to possibly be on the block now. But they tried to get him straight up for Luke Voit, but they ended up taking the Justin Lange. So maybe they'll take another crack at him. Try, you know, now that Sean Manea got traded to the Padres, maybe there's an opening to get Paddock, and maybe we can get him at a buy low type of deal because they almost kind of need to move him. So we'll have to see on that. Any of the other news right now is we're still waiting on a long-term extension with Judge and the Yankees, and I haven't heard anything about it. There's no really rumors going out there that it's supposedly supposed to happen by the time the season starts, or it's not going to happen until after the season. So season starts on Thursday, so they got 4 more days. You know, by the time you listen to this, 4 more days to get it done. We'll see what the numbers are, but it's going to be costly. So let's look at the 40-man, because it's been updated, and we'll go through this every time. So there's currently 42 on here, but with Herman and Britton being on the 60-day IL, they can add the other two. So Castro now being on this team, and he's probably going to break camp with the team because he's leaguer. So Castro, Chapman, Cole, Cortez, Devi Garcia, who may break with the team. I don't know. Maybe not. Luis Hill probably won't. He'll probably go down probably after today since he gave 5 runs. Yoenis Gomez is already in the minors. Chad Green, Clay Holmes, Michael King, who will break camp. Possible starter. Lasagna, Lucas Lucqui, Ron Marichinio, Nacho. I know I butcher his name. I haven't even seen him pitch this spring. I wonder how he's been doing, because I honestly have not seen him throw. Medina's already in the minors. Monty Peralta, Steven Writings, Clark Schmidt, J.P. Sears. I did see him pitch. He doesn't look like anything special. Severino, Tylon, so that's your pitchers. Higgy, Orbit will start on the IL. Trevino will be up, so I wonder what happens with him when he comes off. My guess is it'll be probably sent to AAA Scranton, and then they'll probably release somebody down there. Oswaldo Cabrera is already in the minors. Donaldson, Kiner Falefa, DJ, Oswald Peraza sent down. Rizzo, Glaber, Andujar. Maybe Andujar breaks camp with the team. Florial already got sent down. Gallo, Hicks, Judge, Locastro, who I think will break with the team because he is already on the 40-man, so he's going to be up, I think. Everson Pereira's in the minors. Jason Rosario, who they just got from the Red Sox, already in the minors. And then Stanton is your DH outfielder. So that's your 40-man roster right there. For lack of, better term, it is what it is. And is there more moves to be made? Is there a pitcher that they're trying to get? Is there another batter that they're trying to get? Is there, you know, a garage sale player that they're trying to get to, you know, bolster up the depth? Is Brett Gardner coming back? God, I hope not. But that's always a rumor. Up until I see the first fucking pitch on Thursday at 1 p.m., I'm still going to believe that there's a chance that he'll be back. Now, I'm hopeful he won't. But you never know. And there's always a rumor of that. So you have to be, you know, a little suspicious that may happen. But I'll tell you what. This team It's got grit. And they got an attitude now. You heard Hicks. Hicks wants to be a 30 for 30 guy. He wants to be 30 home runs, 30 steals. And I did see somebody on Twitter write a funny line, but like, he needs to worry about playing 30 games first. And I thought that was really funny because that's true. But you know what? I love the swagger, man. Go get it. Go get it. You know, I hope he stays healthy enough to get it. He'd be a big part of this team. People shit on him, but when he's healthy, he can play. You know, pitching, I like. Severino had given us a scare the other day. And, you know, he ended up pitching yesterday and he pitched pretty good. So he looked, and he says he has no problems and he looks like he's ready to go. But that's always going to be in the back of your head. Is today going to be the day? And as I keep saying, there's no way in hell he gives you 200 innings this year. Get that out of your head. They're going to manage him. He has not pitched a full season in 3 full years. They're going to build him up. You'll be lucky if he gives you 150 this year. They're going to skip starts. They're going to shorten his games. He might be a 4-inning pitcher on certain days just because he'll be on a strict pitch count. Just to get him a little bit of action. You know? Is that somebody we can rely on? Is he going to be fully stretched out? Is he going to have a dead arm by the end of the year when we're going to need him in big games in September and October? These are things we have to worry about. Is Nestor going to be the same great pitcher he was last year? I hope so. But can he sustain it just by tomfoolery and trickery? You know what I mean? It worked last year. He has the confidence and swagger to do it again, but can he be that guy? Or is he somebody you want to put in the bullpen? You know, I had worried about Tylon, but he seems to be healthy, so he can be that number two. But right now he's slated as the number three. Cole is Cole, but he needs to be better than he was last year. And he has to stay healthy himself. Otherwise, we're really in shit. Monty is Monty. Monty's either good Monty or he's bad Monty. And there's not usually an in-between. Last year he didn't get a lot of run support. This year I hope they can hit for him because, you know, there's some games he pitched really good, and then there was a few games where he pitched like shit. So what is he? He's a number four. You know, is Clark Schmidt finally going to put it together this year? Because it's shit or get off the pot for him. King is perfect for the bullpen. Don't fuck with him. You know, is Devi Garcia, who's been showing so far in spring, he's been hitting 95, which is like, That's crazy for him. What the hell's he been on? Is he going to take that final step? Because it's getting to that point for him too. Because last year should have been the year. He should have been up with this team. But he sucked ass in AAA. And this spring he looks really good. So, you know, is Luis Gil, who did not have a good game today, but he has the stuff. Is he going to take that step forward? There's a lot of questions. And, you know, you can't just go by last year with this rotation. You know, because one or two injuries will derail this whole fucking staff. And you're going to go with the kids? You know? You kind of have to. Or are they going to make a trade? I'm kind of hoping they make a trade, but I wouldn't mind seeing the kids, but, you know, I don't know. It's hit or miss. It's hit or miss. You know, it can go either way, and that's the scary part. It's just not knowing. I think Glaber's going to have a good year. I think moving him back to second is going to give him back that confidence he had, because I believe shortstop just became a black hole for him. and he just couldn't, you know, quicksand, basically, he could just not get out of his own way. And you saw him the other day when they put him at short in spring training, and he didn't charge that ball, and he made a shit throw, and that, you know, it's that. That little thing can send him back. Don't fuck with him. Either he plays second base, or he gets a day off. Because, you know, you shouldn't, we can't put him, you know, we can't put him at short. And that's where Marlon Gonzalez comes in handy, because he can play shortstop. He can, you know, he can be that backup to Izzy, I guess. I guess we just call him that, his nickname. I don't know what the Yankees are going to call him yet, but I don't know. So, you know, Marwin's going to be that guy. So it's going to be, he's going to break camp with the team. They're going to add him to the 40 man, obviously. So somebody's going to come off. It'll probably be that kid they just picked up from Boston. My guess would be the first guy gone. And I think LeCastro comes out. Now, they may keep Andujar up there because they do have an expanded roster for the first couple weeks. I believe it goes 28, and then they'll have to make decisions. But we'll get to that in the next few days, because they're going to obviously release the roster soon, and we'll talk about that then. But I think Glaber's going to have a good year. I think being your regular second baseman, and obviously DJ will be what we had originally signed him for, the Swiss Army knife guy. He'll play first, second, and third on a regular rotation, and it'll open things up. Stanton being able to play the outfield will open things up, open the DH spot up to get, you know, somebody's bat in there and give somebody a day off. That's the plan. Now, as we've come accustomed to, plans often change because of injuries. Now, hopefully the injuries can be limited and the plans don't get altered too much. But we're going to find out, you know, and hopefully things will work out this year. So, we're going to talk about Judge real quick, because his contract is the elephant in the room, and it's getting down to it. And then we're going to call it a show. So real quick, what would you give Judge in terms of years and total value? And he's going to be, mind you, he's going to be 31 after this season, when his new contract kicks in next year. Now, when healthy, and he proved to be fairly healthy last year, he was a pretty goddamn good player. He's top five. Easily. Or at least has the potential to be top five. I would say no further than seven on any kind of list you can come up with. That's how good of a player he is. He is the franchise. He's the face. He's the captain. Now, what do you put a value on all of that? Because my only concern is his age. That's what it comes down to for me. How many years are you willing to give him? He's obviously going to want a big enough contract where he gets the money that he's owed. And I say owed because, you know, of service time and everything else, and because, you know, the way the rules were set up, he hasn't really made his money yet. Yeah, he's getting more money as the years go on, but arbitration, he's going to end up making $20 million or more this year unless they come to an agreement. So if arbitration goes through, he'll probably get $20 million, something like that, maybe a little bit more. But as a contract, it's going to be $30 million plus a year. So what are you willing to go? For me, 6 years is my max. But if it takes that seventh year to get it done and maybe be like, listen, well, you know, you want this much money, but we'll throw in a seventh year to get the average annual down. You know what I'm saying? So, kind of like what they did with LeMahieu, they didn't want to go 5 years, but they gave him that fifth year to get the money down a little bit. It was more reasonable. So, he got the money he wanted. They just kind of spread it out a little bit more, where it ends up being like $15 million a year, which is nothing in comparison to what Judge is going to get. But when you're talking about Judge is going to be making damn near Cole money, that's two guys making, you know, $35 million plus a year. That's a lot. That's a big bite of the payroll. Now, is he worth it? Abso-fucking-lutely he's worth it. But is he worth it in terms of the back end of the contract? Because you got to worry about that. Now, if they win, you know, this year and they win next year and they win a couple rings in his contract terms, and yeah, it was worth it. But you got to remember, Stanton's not going anywhere. And that DH spot is going to be very important at the end of those two guys' career. Because, you know, unless they do a regular rotation with both of them in right field and one of them DHing and then swapping, you know, four games, you know, 4 or 5 games, one guy plays three, one guy plays two, or whatever, how many they want to do it a week and just alternate, that might be the only way it works. It's probably what will end up happening. Now, for me, I would go, now I'm going to try to add this up here, break out the old calculator. So let's see. I would go to get it done. He'll probably want more in this. 220 over 7 years comes out to $31 million a year. Now, is he going to want more than 7 years? I absolutely would not give him more than 7 years. And if he was hell-bent on like an 8 or 9 year deal, I would say have a nice career somewhere else. And we'll see you down the road and hopefully you don't beat up on us. But those days of 10-year contracts for the Yankees, unless you're like under 20 and you're somebody like a Tatis, minus the stupidity of riding your motorcycle, that's who you give those kind of contracts to when you want to lock them up. Someone who, like, you know, if Anthony Volpe becomes that kind of a player, that's the kind of contract you give that kid. You know, 10-year plus whatever, big money. Probably a little less money because it'll be his first big contract, but whatever. That's what I would do. 220 over 7 years just to get it done. That gives him a $31 million a year annual. A little bit more, but we'll round it back to 31. Would he be happy with that? Would you be happy with that? If you think he should get more, let me know. To me, it's not so much about the money because they use the money as a crutch regardless. If he was making $20 million a year, they would use it as a crutch and a hindrance not to sign players who are going to cost money because that's just what they do. Now, if the kids that they're holding in the minors pan out, then it works out glorious. If Dominguez comes up and Peraza and Volpe and then, you know, a couple of the other kids, you know, Wells, Medina, Heel, if those kids pan out, you're not paying them shit through most of that contract. So if that's the plan, then it better pan out because if not, we're in trouble because they're going to start cutting salary to make up for it. You know it, and it sounds ridiculous to say that, but you know that's what's going to happen. Anybody who's making big money or there's players out there that are getting big money, he's not going to go after those guys. It's going to be the trade route and, you know, dumpster diving, so to speak. Look what he's done already. Now, some of these moves will work out and some of them won't, but we all know this about Cashman and Howe right now. So I think part of what their strategy was this offseason was because of that. Because they know that they have to pay Judge. This guy makes us so much money with merchandise. He's the face of the franchise. We can market him. You know, he's a cash cow for us, and we're going to have to pay him as such. But it's going to cost in other areas. And how stupid is that to say? And just saying it out loud makes me angry. But you know it, and I know it. But we'll have to wait and see what happens. I think they're obviously going to get it done. But we'll see what the repercussions is of that contract. And that'll be down the line. We'll talk about it then. So I'm going to let you go. You guys have a great week. We'll talk again soon. Remember to subscribe. Tell a friend. Tell an enemy. Shout it from the rooftops. Tell your family. Tell everybody. Tell your cabbie. Tip your cabbie. He's probably a Yankee fan. Make sure you subscribe, rate, review. Be safe out there. Love you all. And of course, go Yankees.
Thanks for listening to The Savage Empire. Subscribe and leave a comment wherever you listen. Follow us on Twitter @ Savage Empire Pod. And of course, go Yankees.